Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, that podcast focused on the zero emission future that we all hope for. Every week I get joined by one of the wonderful members of the team. This member is on the hoof and so extra committed today, and it's JC in a little sort of curvy thing.
Indeed, I have a booth. I'm very excited.
That's what they call them, a booth. Very good. And we have someone else in a booth too, or at least so it seems. We'll get a description in a minute. We have, and this guy has got voice, people. This is Stephen Briers, editor-in-chief of Barrel Media here in the UK. Fabulous to have you, Stephen. Welcome.
Thank you. I should say I'm not group editor of the whole of Bauer. I think a few of my colleagues might be disappointed to hear that, but certainly the B2B brands that we have.
Excellent. Well, it's standard practice to get something wrong very early on because, you know, it sets the tone for getting things wrong. But Stephen, it is a genuine pleasure to be able to talk to you because, you know, I have been familiar with the brands of, and we were talking about this earlier, so I'm not going to pretend that I remembered this off the top of my head, but EMAP and Bow Media, sort of dating back to early 2000s, really, for me, having been around. And you've been with the business quite a while, I think, and been on that journey. But I want to start by asking this, a really important question from my perspective. As a journalist, working in the automotive sector and being responsible for pretty much all of the content that much of the fleet sector gets, what do you see as your responsibility as a journalist?
Yeah, that's a big question, which you kindly sprung on me a few moments before we started. it is a big question. There is a big responsibility for accuracy, to get things right. I see our role as supporting our audience. We've got a number of roles, but certainly to support our audience in their aims and objectives. So, you know, it's about how we help fleets do. You know, be more efficient, to be more effective, to save money, to be safer, to be greener, and how we put that information across in an understandable way. Again, as I say, in an accurate way as well. Ultimately, from a business point of view, we're also here to make money. We have to make money from Mr. Bauer, otherwise we don't exist. And that's can be quite tricky because, you know, there are certain things that we would love to do, but if we can't support that with revenue, then it's very difficult. But fortunately, we've got a great team that's able to commercialize a lot of things that we do. But really, it's about providing information that people need, people want, in a way that they can understand.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europe Car, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europe Car's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europe Karma. Search Europe Car Business.
Now, I want to introduce you to a fellow journalist, Mr. JC.
Please.
So, but you've done a bit of journalism, haven't you?
Yeah, I had my own column in the Mirror Group for 7 years talking about sustainable transport. And it's an onerous place to be because people do look to you for objectively covering the news. And when you're passionate about things, that can be quite tough, Stephen. I'm very passionate about EVs and decarbonisation. How do you keep your objectivity? Because you've stated your aims and they're to give your readers the things they need and to make sure that you position the market in a fair and honest way. But you're a passionate person. You care very much about the job you do. How do you keep your passion in check?
How do you keep passion in check? Well, I mean, certainly you need to look at all sides of the argument. It is no good simply taking an evangelist's view on, let's say, electrification, for example, because people ultimately won't believe you. You know, you've got to look at, you know, there is nothing in this world that is all positives. There are always challenges or negative elements to anything that you look at. And you have to be honest enough to put that across. And sometimes that can be quite difficult and maybe clashes with, you know, your own personal beliefs or maybe the beliefs of your audience. But it is incumbent on us as journalists to put across all sides of the story. And I think by doing that, it does inevitably keep some of your passion in check. But there are plenty of ways in which we can express our passion in many ways.
And obviously, do tell.
Well, certainly, yes, quite. There are always the opportunities for opinions. And actually, we did go down a route of adding in a lot of opinion to as a kind of an addition to some of the stories that we write, which then allows you to kind of, you know, be a bit more personal. And, you know, we do that with some of the newsletters that we do. We do some of that with some of the stories that we do on the website and also in print as well. So that gives you an opportunity to just sort of step back from the objective straightforward journalism, just say, well, this is my take on it, this is my view on it, and you can put across your passion in that way as well.
And can I just say, your newsletter is genuinely, and I've been everything else pretty much in the industry, but your newsletter is the one I read more than any other because of your ability to tell a story succinctly and deliver facts. It's brilliant.
Yeah, that's great to know, thank you. Appreciate your feedback.
But do you, because we talk about this objectivity, and I've got another question rattling around in my head, but of course you've got this brilliant platform, particularly within the fleet sector, and of course it would be remiss not to speak about the monthly News at 10, your webinar, which is on the, I think it's the last Friday of every month at 10 o'clock. There is other news services on that.
I understand there is
time.
Something else happens around that time, yeah.
but I think is that we are different. And what I love about that platform, some would say funner.
They just
it's not in comparison to you. because you have some great people on there, some really cool people that have opinions, so you're almost giving your objective platform to those that have an opinion and can generate a bit of whilst you moderating perfectly down the middle line and allowing others to bring the opinion. Is that something that is a deliberate act to kind of bring a bit more opinion to the surface?
Well, it was, yeah. It was a real opportunity for us to take a different approach. We've run webinars for a long time, and they tend to be on a particular topic, and they tend to be quite business orientated. Whereas this was an opportunity to say, okay, these are the hot topics over the past month. Let's get some experts, some people that really know what they're talking about and have strong opinions, and get them to add their view. It's the reason why we always put in the disclaimer saying, you know, these are personal views, may not reflect the views of their company. They get out a free jail card. You know, it doesn't always work. We've had some panelists that have been hauled off and hauled over the coals, or I can tell you who. But it is an opportunity to for them to, yeah, absolutely. It's an opportunity for them to, you know, say what they really think, and hopefully not suffer too many consequences as a result. But it's a completely different approach for us.
Brilliant, I love it.
I suspect, Stephen, that you didn't wake up one morning as a young boy and think, I'm going to be the editor of the B2B properties rather, that you have at, and publications that you have at Bauer Media. You've had a career. You've obviously done your apprenticeship, if you like. Can you talk to us about the journey from where you started in industry and where you are now? How was Stephen Bryars formed?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I did always want to be, or I was always interested in journalism when I was at school. But I had one of my very best friends, who is now very senior within the Sunday Times. He was really passionate about wanting to be a journalist. And sometimes if you've got a friend like that, you don't really want to go, oh, me too, you know, because it feels like you're taking the spotlight away from them. And because he always really wanted to be a journalist. And I just thought it was quite interesting. So I didn't really make too much noise about it. I, you know, did my O levels, did my A levels, last year of O levels, by the way, just to date me.
That's when I got mine too.
did my A levels. And then, to be honest, I wasn't even thinking about going to poly or university, but this same chap said, look, we live in a small village. You've got to get out. You can't stay here. You just will have no career. So he was the one who actually persuaded me to go. And I actually went and did leisure and business management at Leeds Polytechnic, which I think may have been the last year that it was a polytechnic before everything became universities. So I did my course there. I found the business side really interesting, you know, the financials, the marketing, all that kind of thing. And then really spent about a year trying to find a job. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Dabbled in various things. I was a postie for a while. Did a bit of financial services advice for a while. So, you know, if you need any advice on pension planning, then, you know, don't come to me. I was terrible at it. It was all commission-based. Horrendous few months. And then a job came up at the intriguingly named Body magazine.
Oh,
and whenever I tell people, they get very excited, and then less so when I tell them it's about car bodies. So it's an accident repair title that was published by a trade association, the Vehicle Builders and Repairers Association, up in Leeds. Because I stayed there after I went to Polytechnic there. And I started working there for an editor. Didn't really know what I was doing. But, you know, the one thing I do, if I have got one strength in life, is my ability to learn from others and just soak up information like a sponge. So I did quite a bit of learning from her. Worked there for about 5 years, initially as assistant editor. And then when she left, I took over as editor for 2 or 3 years. And then saw that there was a job being advertised down in Peterborough, Leeds to Peterborough. It's a strange career move, maybe, for automotive management. So EMAP, you mentioned, Paul, EMAP had just bought automotive management from an independent publisher. And it was just a bit broader than just looking at body shops and accident repair. You know, it was the whole industry, the whole automotive industry from a franchise dealer perspective. So I was fortunate to get a job there. I suppose in business, that put me under the wing of the person that's probably had the greatest influence on my career. A great man called Tony Willard, who came up through the kind of regional journalism ranks into business journalism. And the reason he had such a big impact on my career as a journalist is I didn't really know what a journalist was, to be honest. You know, I'd been doing it for a few years. I joined Tony at Automotive Management, and it was a complete revelation in terms of how you structure stories, how you get the message across to your audience, how you view other people's writing and kind of rewrite that for the audience. So he had a huge influence on me. So yeah, I was his deputy for a number of years, and then he moved on, and a couple of businesses merged. I became a news editor under a new editor who came in. He came in from the consumer side, a guy called Angus McKenzie. And that was a lot of learning as well, because he was very much a consumer journalist coming into a business world. So he had a very different view on writing and particular, you know, that immediate impact of an opening sentence or an opening paragraph. So I learned quite a bit from him. Then he left, and I was sort of almost handed the job, I think a little reluctantly, maybe from the business. I was certainly the cheap option. Angus, bless him, knew how to spend a pretty penny. He moved on to Car Magazine, left at Automotive Management with a little bit of a hole in the finances from some exuberant overspend on freelancers, and I was the cheap option. So I came in, and which was fantastic. It was a huge opportunity for me. Spent a few years on Automotive Management, then. Sort of, I again, I would say the move to Fleet News was offered to me first time around. I went for an interview. I wasn't really that interested, to be honest. The world of dealerships, you know, the conflict of dealers and manufacturers was really interesting. I looked at Fleet News, I thought, oh, it's just a little taxation, isn't it? You know, people driving around in cars and, you know, cars are fascinating, the industry is fascinating, but it's the business side that I'm particularly interested in. So I didn't put my best foot forward, perhaps. I didn't get the job. Someone else did. And then a few years later, that came up again. It was kind of got to the stage of, look, you really need to move. You've been on Automotive Management long enough. I think at that time it was 9 years I'd been on Automotive Management. Look, come on, go and try something else. So I went to Fleet News, found out it's not just all about tax. It's actually really interesting. It's a hugely dynamic industry. You see a different side than you do on Automotive Management. Obviously coming in at a time when even then, so this is 2009, we were doing green fleet supplements, you know, still talking about next year will be the big year for, you know, everyone going down an environmental route. You know, yep. We kept it up for about 10 years. It was really fascinating. And there are still lots of business dynamics within the fleet side that kept me interested. And then in 2015, it was actually a proposal that I made to my boss to kind of restructure the way that we were doing things. We've always had an online presence that was growing quite substantially around that sort of time. And I put in place a proposal that we would bring together Fleet News and Automotive Management under one editor-in-chief as it was then. Obviously me. And we would move the Automotive Management editor, Jeremy Bennett, into the digital side where he'd been previously and had massive strengths. And then we would bring through Tim Rose, who was already on Automotive Management and was originally my deputy, into an editor's role. So then we created this sort of mini structure within B2B. And it worked really well. And both the brands have had a lot of success. And then 3 years ago, Bauer took a very similar route and decided to create group editors across the business. So you have one for motorcycles, for example, where we have three or four motorcycle titles, and basically replicated the model that we put in place on B2B. At the same time as that restructure, I then gathered up Rail Magazine within my portfolio. So that's quite an interesting one and quite a bit different. Hugely politicized. You could say the automotive industry has its political elements. God, yeah. Nothing like the rail side. I mean, that's incredible. And everyone has a view on the railway, whether you use the railway or not. Everyone's got a view about it. So, yeah, that's kind of what got where I got to where I am today. Quite a sort of a long story. It's one, like I guess a lot of our audience, a lot of the fleet managers, nobody says I want to become a fleet manager, or very few people. It's usually something you're handed or you kind of fall into. And, you know, there is lots of that happened to me along my career.
Do you know what I love about that, Stephen? And it's that. So I got two O-levels with a very dubious repute, and then got nothing else. But the important thing for me through my career was, and by all means, go and listen to the podcast that I did on this very same thing, was the power of people in your life. And it is incredible that, you know, you're now, I think we've got it right, as editor-in-chief of the Bauer Group. Well, I still haven't worked it out, but you're very important within the Bauer Media Group locally here in the UK. We'll go with that. Group editor, Fleet News, AM, Rail and Bauer Media. There we go. You've got to those heady heights, but it is very much about that journey of people betting on you and investing in you and stuff. How important do you think that is within our industry? What sort of mechanisms have you enjoyed, and what would you like to see in place within our sector?
Oh, it's people are hugely important. You know, the people that inspire you, that motivate you, the people that believe in you. You know, I've benefited a lot from that, but I also hopefully instill that within my team as well, particularly in terms of the supportive nature. One of the things that's you may know this, JC, from your experiences, journalism's changed a lot. It's changed in many ways, but I'm just going to talk about one. The old newsroom of people being shouted at and bawled out and screamed at if they didn't get something right to the satisfaction of the editor. I mean, it's largely gone. I'm not saying it's completely gone. I certainly know in some of the national papers it still happens. But in an organisation like Bauer, which is very magazine-based and lots of magazine publishers like ourselves, it's a completely different situation now. It's far more nurturing, it's far more understanding. You're bringing people through, you're kind of understanding their kind of concerns and challenges. You get the best out of people. You get more out of people through that approach. Yes, they may not be as hard as journalists from the past. I'll tell you what, they certainly drink and smoke an awful lot less.
That's true. I thought you were going to say a lot more. I'm just basing that on a Fleet News dinner or two.
I know. That's just the industry in which we inhabit, the Fleet industry, that is. I think in terms of really understanding people and getting to know people and knowing what makes them tick and as individuals is so important. And I think I would hope that's one of the things that I bring to bear within the Bauer organization.
Well, I think it gives us confidence, doesn't it? When we've been on that journey ourselves, we try and invest and give others opportunities and things like that. It's always something that, and the guys in the EV Cafe, I've invited a young photographer along to our next partner day. Their first kind of corporate gig, that kind of thing. But I love that. Just kind of throw somebody in the deep end. Let's learn a few things. Let's kind of get some outputs. Let's shape it a little bit. I think that's great. And I love that mentality. I'm curious, because tell us a little bit about Bauer as a bigger organization, because from EMAP it was very local, very East Midlands something publishing.
East Midlands Allied Press, yes, based in Peterborough, although it had offices around all over the place, but it was formed in Peterborough, which is why we still have a large presence in Peterborough. But yeah, we were bought by Bauer in the mid 2000s. It's a German family owned business, which is interesting because EMAP, it was a PLC. We all did fairly well out of our shares packages when we were acquired. I say fairly well. I'm not enough to retire. Clearly, I'm still here.
Still here.
But Bauer, it's a multinational company. Its primary countries are the UK, Germany, of course, and Poland. But it is present in quite a few European countries. In the UK, it has a huge magazine and digital presence, but also it has a large radio network as well of national and local radios. Huge part of the business, which is quite interesting. We rarely see them occasionally at big award ceremonies when we all come together. Bauer did, I should say, celebrate its 150th anniversary last week down in London, where both sides of the business came together for one of the few occasions. So it's a big organization. It's a good organization to work for. It did take a lot of the values that EMAP used to have, particularly around the training. We have an amazing training portfolio of both kind of half hour learning sessions with some of the outstanding people that work here, but also anything from degree level or master's level training that you can do over a number of years. So it's a great organization for that kind of learning side of things. It's very supportive. There are way too many meetings, as there are for many corporate organizations, but that aside, it's a pretty good employer. It's interesting because B2B, this is it for Bauer, B2B, these three titles. Globally, it has no more business titles, when it acquired EMAP back in the 2000s, well, it didn't acquire the entire business. EMAP had a big business portfolio and a big consumer portfolio. Because although we were business titles, because we were associated with cars, we sat within the consumer title because they felt there was more synergies with car and Parkers and those sort of titles. So we were swept up in the Bauer acquisition. And then, you know, they were sifting through everything they'd bought, all these consumer titles. Yes, we know how to deal with those. What's this B2B thing over here? What do you guys do? What are these events that you do? And it was quite a learning for them. And, you know, there's been times where we thought, you know, do we fit here? Are we likely to get sold off? But I think the fact that we make shed loads of money kind of helps. we're a good part of the business for Bauer. You know, our portfolio ranging across some print, the digital side, and obviously the events portfolio, huge events portfolio that we've got, you know, accounts for the majority of our revenue and profits. Everything from the webinars like the Fleet's Attend that you mentioned to, you know, to our awards, Company Car in Action, which you guys are very involved with, and of course Fleet of Mobility Live as well. And that's just on the fleet side. You know, it's a huge part of the business that we have. And it's we've proved ourselves to be worthy of Bauer ownership, I like to think. And there's, you know, there's learnings both ways, the way that we do things within B2B and our knowledge and relationships with our audience. I think there's learnings there for the consumer guys as well. You know, obviously they rely more on newsstand and subscriptions, but having that kind of real market knowledge, I think is a win for both parts of the business.
Let's pick up on Fleet and Mobility Live, Stephen, the place where I first met you and realized that FML, which Paul had been talking about for a long time, was as special as he said it was. It really is a remarkable event and one that is right up there for us. Why is it so special from your perspective? What is it that you do so well there?
I think coming back to what I just mentioned around knowledge of the audience and our engagement with the audience, I mean, this is crucial. I mean, essentially what we're doing is bringing together buyers, i.e. the fleets, with the suppliers. And you could argue actually across every part of our business, essentially that's what we're doing. And, you know, we obviously have to engage an audience to create an audience that a supplier wants to contact, get in touch with. I think the fact that from a very early stage, in fact from year one, we engaged with the fleets and created a visitor advisory board, that gave us a fantastic insight into the type of content that fleets would engage fleets. And it's all about having that audience. You know, if we get the audience, then people will want to be there, they'll want to exhibit. Understanding of the audience means we know the right sessions to put on, what are the right topics, who are the best speakers. And it's bringing together those kind of three elements. You know, the seminars are hugely important. You know, they're the obvious business reason to attend because it's all about learning. But ultimately, it's an exhibition show. You know, that's it makes its money from, you know, people exhibiting. And, you know, we have to work really hard to make sure that we've got the right people in the room, we've got the best people in the room from both an exhibitor and a supplier perspective. And obviously you guys are there, you know, both with the EV kind of cafe village area and obviously with the with a seminar as well, which are always hugely successful. So, you know, without that, if there isn't a reason to do business or to learn or, you know, to do something that's going to improve yourself as a fleet decision maker or improve your business perspective from a supplier point of view, then it doesn't exist. But it's the bringing together the buyers and sellers in one place over 2 days, I think, is what really makes it work.
It's almost like a giant round table.
Yes, I suppose in a way it is. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, it's, in my view, it's the suppliers that make it. It's a supplier show. We do have manufacturers that are there, and they get a lot out of it. And actually, this year we've got quite a few more manufacturers there. You know, it's a dynamic industry, as I mentioned before. There's so many new entrants. I mean, it's unprecedented. Yeah, we are living through unprecedented times in terms of the upheaval and the change that's happening within this industry. So yeah, so that has two impacts. Obviously, you've got new market entrants that want to find an audience, so they want to be there, and then you've got the incumbents, the legacy manufacturers that want to protect their space, and so they want to be there as well. And whereas we've obviously got Company Car in Action, which is very much a bums on seat driving show, this is just an opportunity to have different types of conversations with the audience. So yeah, so we've got quite a few manufacturers here that will be here this year as well. But I still feel it's the suppliers that really give the show longevity. You know, we need those leasing companies, those rental companies, those telematics, etc., etc.
There's so many questions, and so many sort of avenues to go down here. But you've touched on a couple of times, the best speakers and, the best fleet managers. So who is the best speaker in the industry at the moment?
The single best speaker? Wow, that's quite a question. I mean, the single best speaker.
Know. Or top five?
Well, obviously, you guys.
I was going to say, if you put Kirby in that top five.
But that's very kind.
Well, your sessions are always hugely popular, and not just at Fleet Mobility Live or the Commercial Vehicle Show. Wherever you go, you draw a huge crowd, and you approach the topic from a different perspective. I know the whole funner thing, but you do bring life.
He said it.
I did say it.
That's getting clipped.
Well, you have to take the thing off the end. The old funner thing, which I've heard. You bring more of a serious message, but delivered in a light-hearted, engaging way, and that's very difficult to do. But you do that extremely well. Obviously, the speakers and the people that the audience want to hear, your Lorna McAteers, we all know her. She is an outstanding fleet manager. She is a real leader. She is a person that has probably done more to raise the profile of the fleet sector amongst, government and other people that. She really knows her stuff, and she's a great person. She's certainly up there when it comes to the types of speakers that people want to listen to. I was going to say, old friend AFP, Paul Hollick is another one. I mean, he has had a massive impact on this industry through how he took, what was was it failing? It certainly wasn't succeeding as ACPO.
It was past its best, wasn't it?
It was struggling to get that engagement with the audience. He kind of oversaw that merger of ACFO and the ICFM, created the Association of Fleet Professionals, and worked bloody hard. I mean, I know how much effort he put into that to engage the audience and bring fleets back into the fold and understand, what they do, and Paul said this to me himself, but what they do is very similar to what we do in terms of engaging and understanding an audience and providing them with information and support that they need, championing their successes, etc., etc. The main differences between our businesses is we also have to make money on the back of it to satisfy our owners. But we are quite similar organisations in that way. He's had a huge impact. I don't think without him, it's arguable whether we would still have a fleet association.
It's such an exciting time. I think we've got some great people doing some great stuff. I love the storytelling type of people and also those articulate engineer-y type folks. One of the ones that stands out for me is James Rooney. I love listening to that guy. He is so knowledgeable. I had the pleasure of having him on a recent EV rally, and I'm catching up with him later this week. Just fabulous to spend time chatting to somebody that just gets it. Another guy, Stuart Murphy, what a great communicator he is about the journey that he's at. And these are operational people. Another one, Ollie Krawn, is the people that have been in it and have operated in it and now speaking to the audience and telling their story. Storytellers are always great for me. But there, I mean, as you point out, there are a fabulous plethora of people, but there are some standout people. So, yeah, it's cool. But I realize I'm talking a lot. John, I'm stealing all of this because I've got so many questions. John, come back to you, mate. Just dive in.
See, I can be patient.
You can.
Stephen, we often hear when we're on the road that the sustainable transport space and events in particular are quite crowded and we have a very, very busy calendar. You've carved out a niche as one of the go-to events. What can you see happening in our space? Will there be acquisitions? Will there just be casualties? Will there be new entrants coming in? How do you see it?
From what perspective?
From the industry perspective. So as an attendee, supplier, if you like, we're constantly being badgered to go to this event, that event. Can we make this work? The visitors all say there are so many to choose from.
Too many.
Absolutely.
Do you see that we will ultimately end up with huge acquisitions where lots of companies will come in and say, we'll buy all of these smaller shows, put them together? Can you see that some will just fall by the wayside? What's going to happen in our industry?
All of the above, really. You're absolutely right. There are so many events, big and small, some more consumer orientated, but ultimately even the ones that are more consumer orientated, because it's all about sustainability and decarbonisation, appreciate that it's the business, it's the fleet side that's driving that. So they all inevitably start to bring those elements into their shows. It's certainly a challenge for us because there is so much going on. There's so much noise for our audience, but also demand for spend from our commercial partners. Some will fall by the wayside, particularly as sustainability and decarbonisation become the norm and understood and accepted by everyone. There will be acquisitions. We've looked in the past. We have been an acquisitive organisation in other parts of the business, so you can't rule any of those things out. But equally, we certainly talking personally from a Fleet News perspective, we do have legacy in that space, that far predates me. Fleet News was built on the foundations of many editors that came before me. I'm just the current sort of tenant looking after the brand and trying not to mess it up.
Is there a big plaque in your office with previous chief editors that has all the names on them?
Office. Welcome to the modern age, John. We don't have offices. We're all open plan here when we are here.
I imagined you as a guru would actually have a little space to yourself.
No, this little square pod is as good as it gets. There is no plaque with all the former editors, but when we always name check them whenever we do an anniversary type issue. But they're the ones that built the brand. They're the ones that built the kind of the legacy, and we just try to carry that on. But yeah, it is difficult because there are so many events out there. Lorna and others talk a lot about this. There's nothing we can do about that. If somebody feels that there's a space and opportunity to do something more, then they can. But equally, there are events or there are parts of the country where we are not particularly strong and others have a presence there. Primarily Scotland is a big one for us. We've had a number of fleets, absolutely. We've had a number of fleets that have said to us, look, you do some great events, you have the Fleet 200 with the biggest fleets that come together on a quarterly basis. We can't travel that way to go to these meetings. Why aren't you coming to see us? And we take that on board. We kind of you know, we're open for criticism and feedback. And they're right. Absolutely.
Let's make it happen.
Based in Scotland. In case you hadn't realised.
No. Well, we are coming up. Yes, November the 22nd for a little plug. I'm not a big fan of plugging things, to be honest. But we are coming up to Scotland. We're going to come up on a regular basis, either a couple of times a year or quarterly, depending on how successful that they are. And we're going to follow a similar sort of format that we do with our Fleet 200 strategy network meetings. So this will be Fleet Scotland strategy network. We'll bring together some speakers. Brilliant. We'll do some round tables. We're talking to the fleets now to get them on board. It's a fair criticism. We have kind of overlooked north of the border, and we're doing something to rectify that.
Well, if I can put in a pitch here, head of sustainable transport for the Scottish government. If you need anything.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I will be on the call, because that is exactly the sort of space we want to be in. Yeah, that's exactly the place we want to go.
See, that's the danger of plugging things. John wants to plug himself. Bloody hell. Now, see, honest, genuine thought here. I mean, obviously we try and keep ourselves to a sensible time, but I could honestly talk to you for hours. I think that this industry, our sector, is so, so interesting at the moment. I was, you know, as we were talking about the Fleet Mobility live event, I mean, the EV Cafe Village is surrounded on all sides by new innovation. I mean, we've got Flexus there. You've got Geely there. You've got Mini with a completely revamped electric kind of lineup, BYD, Verizon. You know, it's just like a lot of these names would be completely like just not there a few years ago. And it's an incredible time, and in time where we need clarity, where we need vision, where we need, well, what do we need now? Hold that thought, because we have a closing tradition here on the EV Cafe.
He's good, you know. He is good.
and that closing tradition, and stick, brace yourself, because this is a special privilege.
Brace position.
It is the EV Cafe magic wand. It has its own lightning bolt and everything. So it is coming over to you, sir. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Here it comes. There you go. It's coming, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. Yeah, he's got it. There we go. Anyway, so now, Stephen, you have a great privilege in your hand now to say, what is, stop it, what would you do with that magic wand today? You've got one wish. What would you do? And I it could be personal. You know, it could to see Bristol Rovers get to the top of the league. I mean, some things are even beyond the realms of Harry Potter.
Yeah, I think you could be right, yeah.
But what would it be?
Wow, there's a question. What would it be? So, well, I mean, there are so many little things. You know, you could talk about, you know, you could get very specific around, you know, the improvement in terms of van electrification.
Yes. Right, that's, you know, it. That was your wish. Sorry, I'm going to save your first answer.
I'll tell you what, if I was doing things for our audience, and when you bear in mind, you know, 70 or so percent of fleets run vans as well as cars, you know, that is the one big thing that is going to make a massive difference to their operations, having viable electric vans and electric pickups. You know, that would make it such a massive difference. I suppose clarity, government clarity, in however you want to read into that, but clarity of thought, clarity of legislation, long-term clarity. You know, that's one thing any fleet will say is, in some ways, they don't mean it when they say this, but in some ways you can do whatever you want. You can impose whatever tough measures you want. You know, we'll always adapt to it, but make sure we've got time, and you know, there's no U-turns. It is a clear policy that we can approach, we can follow. So government clarity, I think, would be a huge thing. But for Bristol Rovers to, I mean, just get out of the hellhole that is League Two would be enough. I mean, you know, I'm not even asking for us to get to the Championship, let alone the Premiership. Can we just get out of League Two, please?
Well, do you know what? We're gonna allow the two, the Clarity and the Bristol Rovers. Well, being a Bristolian, you know, whilst I'm not a Bristol Rovers fan, nor have I ever been, we will allow that. We'll allow that.
I hope you don't fall on the other side of the river there, Paul.
Oh, no. So, long way from there, lads. I'm a Liverpool fan. All my family are Liverpool. So there you go.
I'll allow that. There's a red team that would be far worse than that.
Yes, many. But it's interesting because, and I'm going to follow up with a question on your wish, really, if it's okay. Because of course we've just seen, and this will date this the recording of this podcast to the binning off of the current Future of Rhodes. And I don't know where I'm not. Is it a promotion? Is it just that you've spent too much time out of the office? You know, go and do something more important. I mean, I don't know. But why we see the need to just move people around constantly, and you know, now we've got the 4.25 ton legislation in mid flow. Quick answer, because I know we're running out of time. Is this good? How do we get? It's got to be not a good thing, isn't it?
No, it's not a good thing. No. You want that consistency, but consistency in personnel is very difficult. You know, you look at the department for transport. You know, it's generally been a revolving door of personnel. Makes it very difficult to strike up a relationship. Ministers always seem to be in learning mode rather than understanding and then implementing. So it makes it very difficult, but there are so many facets that need some clarity and need speeding up. You mentioned the 4.25 ton. You know, that's been ongoing for several years now. And it doesn't take a huge amount of work to sort it out.
All the groundwork's been done, hasn't it?
It has, absolutely. It just needs doing. And unfortunately, sometimes with government and the previous one as well as this one, the doing seems to be the difficult thing.
It's true. Well, this has been amazing, hasn't it, John? Just a privilege, genuinely, to speak to somebody that has so much breadth of knowledge across the industry.
Indeed.
Very kind of you to say so. I rely heavily on my team. They've got the real knowledge. They're out in the industry a lot, and we rely on those engagements with the fleets. They tell us everything we need to know. It's to be honest, it's a huge privilege for me, to be honest. It's not my comfy space to be answering questions rather than asking them. Thank you for being reasonably gentle with me. It's a huge privilege to be on this podcast. You've had some amazing people on it, so to think you wanted little old me is quite something. So no, thanks to both of you.
Stephen, you are somebody who's delivered. You know, you deliver in the background very often. You don't take huge amounts of limelight, but you do an awful lot of good work, solid work that the industry needs doing. You're a remarkable human being. I love what you do. As I say, it's the only newsletter I bother with. Thank you for all that you do for our industry and just being a nice stand-up guy. As Paul says, we could chat to you 4 hours, and I hope that we get many, many more hours where we can sit and chew the fat and make the industry a bit better. Thank you for today.
No, thank you very much.
Well, So we want to do some podcasts at Fleet Mobility Live. I presume you're going to be there, Stephen.
Funny enough, I might be there. Yeah, I might be there for the 2 days. Yeah,
excellent.
Yeah. I mean, I'll try and get out of it, but I don't think I don't
all
think
those
that's
meetings.
An option. Yeah. Oh, you're doing some. Okay, you're doing some podcasting there. Yeah, we
live. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, first of all, have you got? We'll take this offline, people. We'll just say. Anyway, so Fleet Mobility Live, this will be ahead of Fleet Mobility Live. So Fleet Mobility Live is on the 7th and 8th of October. We will be there, as you've already heard, and also the wonderful Stephen Bryars will be there with the team, Chris Lester and Katie, and probably Sarnie will put in an appearance. That's the word.
Put in a turn. I think you were going to say.
And but that will be a fabulous time. But it has been a privilege. It has been a joy. I've loved spending time with you, and you know. Look forward to the next time, and thank you for all you do for our industry, for the platforms that you've created, for the honesty and the honest conversations that you you table with your objectivity and bringing all of the various different elements. So Stephen Bryars, thank you very much. So people, you can follow Stephen Bryars on the wonderful LinkedIn. And obviously all the Bauer kind of connections, like Fleet News. And as John says, sign up for that newsletter. That is some newsletter that has helped me track the van industry. And I thought I knew everything. But no, apparently not.
I was thinking, Paul, as you were handing over the wand, I was thinking, yes. You mentioned Harry Potter. Vanny Spotter could be your nickname.
No.
Sorry.
No. Shut up, TMV. Right, everybody, head over to the website. You will find a whole list of the aforementioned wonderful people that we've also interviewed. We'll be adding some more from the Fleet News, Fleet Mobility Live conference and exhibition. You'll be able to hear those coming out. The fleet managers, people that are really making a difference in the industry, but there's plenty already done. So go check them out immediately. Follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram and all of those good places. But until next time, everybody, have a wonderful day and extend your thanks to the wonderful Stephen Bryars. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you.
See ya.